Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, juvenile offenders will no longer be forced to spend weeks or months alone in solitary confinement. That is on a federal level. President Barack Obama has made that particular order. We'll talk about that issue and what it means for our criminal justice system. Also, Oscar So White campaign continues. Three civil rights groups say they want to meet with the Academy as well as various studios. We'll talk to Mark Morial, president and CEO of the National Urban League, about that. Also, Donald Trump. Well, guess what? He's whining and complaining. He's not going to have a debate on Fox News. So we'll discuss that with our panel. Plus, 18-year-old Montel West blows mall goers away in Michigan as he is playing the piano. He's never been classically trained. We'll show you the viral video and talk to the young man. Plus, part two of my interview with Sweet Honey and The Rock. And, of course, it is Wild and Out Wednesday. But we always have a little fun with our comedians. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Solitary confinement for juvenile prisoners is now banned in the United States on the federal level. That is an order from President Barack Obama. The president announced a series of executive actions in an opinion piece Tuesday in the Washington Post. Along with the juvenile ban, federal correction officials cannot use solitary confinement as punishment for low-level infractions. Also, solitary confinement cannot exceed 60 days instead of the current 365 days. The new rules apply to about 10,000 federal inmates. Earlier this week, the Supreme Court ruled a 2012 decision to ban automatic life sentences for youth should be retroactive. That was in a 6-3 vote. Sam Alito, Scalia, and Clarence Thomas didn't agree. That means 2,100 juveniles convicted of murder have a possibility of parole. Joining me right now from Atlanta is Dr. Dwight Owens, chief psychiatrist at Peach State Psychiatric Services. Also in the studio, Kimberly Classic, Republican contributor for PolitiChicks.com?
PolitiChicks.com.
All right, just making sure. David Swerling, assistant editor of the Washington Post. Also, Angela Rye, principal and CEO of Impact Strategies. Doc, I want to go to you first. This is a huge decision. We've seen various changes. Some 20-plus states have also tried to make changes to their laws in terms of how we deal with juveniles. Are we finally turning a corner here where America is realizing that the treatment of 12, 13, 14, and 15-year-olds, frankly, makes no sense in this country?
I think that we are finally getting the understanding that to place people in solitary confinement without care, treatment, and services, especially when they may be experiencing a mental illness or ideas of suicidal ideation, I think we are now understanding that we have to take a different approach, being that, you know, the biggest provider of mental health services in America is now jails and actually juvenile justice systems.
Now, when you look at this federal order, and also you have some state changes, do you believe it goes far enough to be able to deal with this issue, again, of trying to protect young folks and not? I mean, look, you got some people, you put them in solitary confinement, you got some folks who say, look, man, they're going crazy.
Well, I think that what has to happen is there has to be education and training. Every jail, every prison needs to have an actual mental health division at this juncture, because a lot of the persons that are incarcerated do suffer from some form of mental illness. I think that we can no longer play around the idea that maybe to give a pill here or a pill there without an actual focus of treatment, care, and services is going to be appropriate. Now we must really start dealing with those issues, getting the appropriate physicians in those settings so that we can attack this head on and deal with what we have to deal with, which is the actual concept of brain disease.
I want to go to our panel here. Bottom line is that this particular action is part of this whole effort when it comes to criminal justice reform. Unfortunately, which is what's happening right now, the bill on the Senate is getting blocked by Republican Tom Cotton. We'll deal with that another day. But Angela, what do you make again of finally an emphasis on saying that what we're doing to juveniles is simply inhumane?
Well, what we're doing to people who are incarcerated, period, when it comes to solitary confinement is inhumane. But I think that when you think about the development of adolescent boys and girls, it's all the more problematic. Like, what happens to their overall mental development, to their overall mental capacity long term when they're out of incarceration? And I think that it's a huge issue that we need to continue to solve for. The criminal justice system in this country at some point was supposed to be to rehabilitate, and I don't know if we've ever seen that. We've never seen rehabilitation in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, Roland, it strikes me that President Obama has made and has announced sort of a reasonable decision, one, to recognize, as Angela is saying, that juveniles are different than people convicted as adults, and then also that in our federal prison system in general, that we have a lot of offenders who are nonviolent first-time offenders who we as a society need to find a way to sort of rehabilitate.
I definitely agree. I think it's supposed to be called correctional facilities, and they're supposed to rehab, but they don't. But I think it should be looked at as individual cases, because some of these kids, and they are kids, go in with mental diseases already, and they should address that upon them entering.
But Dr. Owens, at the end of the day, what you also cannot have is you cannot have this when I talk about this inhumane treatment, because you're dealing with folks who, frankly, yes, they've committed crimes, but 13, 14, 15 years old, they are not fully developed mentally to be able to handle this, unlike adults.
That is true. And I think what has to happen is when you look at developmental milestones, there is not enough training at this juncture, in my opinion, because even when I see kids that are at a very early age, the actual treatment paradigm is going to be a little bit different than for an actual adult. I think when we look at pharmacology as the first chemical restraint, as the first, you know, impulsive kind of thing that we do when we see a kid acting out, when there actually may be some other disease or some other issue that's actually going on with that kid, and we immediately want to jump in right quick and restrain them or put them in solitary confinement or even sometime cause either further abuse.
All right, Dr. Owens, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. All right, folks, so we've been covering, of course, the Oscars So White issue right here on the show, and we've been not necessarily focused just on the Academy and the awards, but also Hollywood as an infrastructure. And three civil rights groups, they have sent a letter to the Academy, but also and made it public to the various studios saying they want a meeting. That is, of course, National Urban League, also Coalition of Black Civic Participation, and the National Action Network. Now, just yesterday, actress Gabrielle Union, let's say she threw a little shade at Stacey Dash. She made her comments that was criticizing, if you will, the NAACP Image Awards and others, and this whole Oscars So White issue.
Who's that? Who's Stacey Dash? Is she like related to Dame Dash? Was she on Rockefeller?
Yeah, I also think
she did speak about Manning BET and
I heard of a crazy lady once, maybe last week, but I don't know what her name is. Yeah, I mean, it's like why there's a need for the Birth of a Nation and why there's a need for the Country Music Awards and the Alma Awards. If you don't see yourself reflected in mainstream awards, you tend to create your own. And until there's no longer a need for that, I celebrate the Almas in the same way I celebrate the Country Music Awards and the same way I celebrate the BET Awards and the Image Awards, which, you know, we'll all be at in a couple weeks.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the more that we focus on inclusion and a true representation of this country, I think that crazy lady will have less to say.
Now, of course, that's Gabrielle, again, throwing some shade there. But still, the issue that we've been focused on, folks, this comes down to jobs. And joining us right now is Mark Morrell, CEO of the National Urban League. Mark, you've sent the letter to the various folks. The position that I've been saying for weeks, this is not about the Academy. That is the end of the process. And we're going to pull up here. Guys, do we have the Variety magazine cover? We have the Variety cover. Please pull it up. Yesterday, Mark, Variety, the front page of their publication has an Oscar statue that says, "Shame on Us." And that's their cover story. And they take the entire industry to task, not just the Academy. Mark, that to me is the real focus, the industry, all of Hollywood.
You are absolutely right, Roland. It's a broader issue. And the Academy is the tip of the iceberg. The Academy is the cherry on the top of this, if you will, sundae which has been whitewashed for generations, and we've got to confront this. The other situation here is that the Hollywood makes commitments every time there's a crisis. They never follow through. A year ago, when you had the same problem with the Oscars, they promised change. A year ago, when Sony was hacked and inappropriate emails were exposed, they made commitments, and there was no follow-up, no return phone calls, no action. So we must continue to push the commitments they made to, quote, change the makeup of the people who select the Oscars over a four-year period is inadequate, it's anemic, it's just crisis communications. Let's put something to try to dodge the outrage that exists.
But Mark, who did they make commitments to? And who is to hold them accountable? So who specifically did they make a commitment to?
That's exactly the point, Roland. Who did they make the commitments to? They put out a press release. They said, we're going to make these changes. And there is no accountability. There is no commitment to anyone specific. And that's why we can't allow them to dodge this very real problem. And we can't let Hollywood, again, just make a few commitments, move on, and not follow up.
I got to ask you this question here, Mark. Three groups there. The NAACP wasn't one of the groups. Normally, you guys have done stuff in the past. Are they doing their own thing? Were they invited to be with you? What happened?
I think that, we invited them to participate in a conversation we had. I know that Cornell Brooks and Rosalind Brock are in solidarity with what we're doing. Of course, they're highly focused on the Image Awards. They're going to host a town hall. And I do think that in the effort to quickly get this letter out, we pulled those together that we could. But I think there are many, many others who are in solidarity. I think the NAACP is in solidarity with what we are saying and our determination this time not to let this go. And I hope that people out there will join us. I'm going to tune out. And I think people should tune out. They shouldn't watch the Oscars. For the Oscars, Oscars night is almost a $70 to $80 million enterprise. Those 30-second commercials go for $1.8 million.
Actually, according to one analysis, it's going to be about $110 million. I got to ask you this here, Mark. You talk about these studios, okay? You sit on the Comcast Advisory Council, which came as part of that memorandum of understanding when Comcast purchased NBC Universal. Reverend Sharpton, who's going to be at this meeting as well, he has a show on MSNBC, which Comcast owns. They own Universal Studios. Universal was a number one studio at the box office. Which Comcast owns, will they be the first studio you meet with, and will you hammer out an agreement with them that will be very clear and precise, that will be vertical and horizontal when it comes to real commitments?
So I think if you look at the years in the MOU with Universal Studios, Universal Studios has made leadership and personnel changes, and they've made some adjustments in some of what they've done. It's not, doesn't go far enough. And yes, Universal, Paramount, Disney, you name them all. We have to be heavily determined. But let me say this. We also need the support of, if you will, Black Hollywood. We need not only the voices of civil rights leaders, we need voices of the community. We need your voice to continue on this issue, to raise awareness about this issue, and for us to understand that African Americans are large TV viewers, large moviegoers. We're very important part to the consumer ecosystem of movies and television in this country, and also to those that buy the products of advertisers. So we've got to, this needs to lead to a comprehensive diversity plan on behalf of all of Hollywood.
Gotcha.
Some accountability, some commitments, some transparency. This we cannot let go of.
All right, Mark Morial, we still appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I want to quickly go to our panel here. Look, at the end of the day, like I keep saying, this is not about the Academy. You have to deal with the talent agencies, the entertainment law firms, the studios. I mean, this is a much deeper issue where we're being frozen out of a multi-billion-dollar industry.
The first thing that comes to mind is Charles King, who started Macro Ventures as a result of what happens in Hollywood, to create a platform where we can create our own because our buying power is decisive, and all of the other things that Mark Morial just mentioned. I also think that it is time out for us to act like this is strictly a Hollywood problem or this is strictly an Oscars problem. This is reflective of every major industry and every power space in this country, whether you're talking about Congress or you're talking about the tech industry.
Yeah, Roland, if I could, can I just circle back around to Stacey Dash for one minute?
Okay. Go ahead.
No. What I wanted to say was, look, I think she missed an opportunity to present a different side of the issue in the sense that if she wants to...
she misses everything.
Okay, but I'm saying, look, you have kudos to National Urban League, to some of the actors who are boycotting and demonstrating. Kudos to Variety. I think, though, if the other side of the issue is going to be presented by someone who sort of is out there as a conservative pundit, someone like Stacey Dash has to come with facts, knowledge, and understanding.
Okay, David, asking Stacey Dash to come with facts is nonsensical, because she has none. She has none. So you're asking somebody to do something that is simply incapable of doing it.
Okay, but then people on that side of the argument need to realize that they have a poor spokesperson.
Okay, go ahead.
I think, you know, we are beating Stacey Dash up way too much. She obviously... obviously should have came with a plan. She wants to integrate and not segregate, but she should have had a plan. She shouldn't have just said, oh, well, we should get rid of BT, we should get rid of everything. Get rid of these things until we actually integrate.
I don't give a damn about Stacey Dash. I'm talking about jobs. This is about billions of dollars. She's a waste of time.
She's also not pushing for integration. This is about, I'm telling you,
they have the meeting, it can't be kumbaya, it must be hardcore commitments and making those kind of demands, and then it must be tracked and say, if you don't do it, then we're going to bring the pressure and not go to your movies. Hey, folks, we're going to continue to follow this, and don't forget to watch the Image Awards right here on TV One, February 5th. Of course, we'll be there in L.A. all week as well. Coming up next, we got our headlines, and we'll talk about what took place, a Kai Gurley case in New York, and that cop who tased a Prairie View City Council member got indicted. All that next on News One Now TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Six Cleveland cops have been fired for their role in a deadly car chase where officers fired 137 bullets at a car, killing two people. Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams, the two folks inside the car, were killed in the shooting in November 2012. Only one of the six cops fired in the shooting were charged in the case. Michael Brillo fired 49 of the shots, including 15 from the hood of the car. He, though, was found not guilty of manslaughter and felonious assault last year. The Cleveland Police Department, the Cleveland Police Patrolman Association, they are upset the cops have been fired.
This is politics 101. We see it across the country. We certainly see it here in Cleveland.
Now, never mind the fact that as a result of this shooting, the Department of Justice came in and actually have a consent decree where they are overseeing the entire department. But that, of course, the union, they are upset. The cops were suspended without pay for up to a month, and a 13th officer retired last year. Folks, at the end of the day, this is a police department run amok. And so, of course, the union will always defend them at no cost. But this was a deal where you get up to 60 police cars that were a part of this chase. I mean, this was just nonsensical.
The union should not be upset, Roland. Look, when someone is charged with a crime, they get their day in court. He was acquitted. So be it. That's our system. You don't get beyond a reasonable doubt to lose your job as a public servant for doing a poor job as a public servant. And that's what happened to these officers.
I agree.
Well, it also just makes no sense, again, where anytime it happens, they'll just run out like, oh, no, let's defend. At some point, I want to see a union official say, you know what, that fool got to go.
Good luck with that.
Speaking of this one right here in Prairie View, Texas, a police officer has been indicted by a grand jury for using a stun gun on a city council member. You might remember when we had the city councilman right here on News One Now. The incident took place in October in the parking area right outside the city council member's Jonathan Miller's apartment while he checked on the few of his fraternity brothers following a visit to his home. Officer Michael Kelly was indicted for official oppression and has been suspended without pay. If convicted, Kelly faces up to a year in jail and a fine of up to $4,000. Councilmember Miller was initially charged with resisting arrest and interference with police duties, with public duties. The grand jury declined to indict him on the interference charge, and the resisting arrest charge was dropped. Prairie View, of course, is where Sandra Bland was arrested and later found dead in her jail cell. Accidental death, that's the long-awaited ruling by the Miami-Dade Medical Examiner in the June 2012 death of 50-year-old Darren Rainey. Rainey was an inmate in the psychiatric unit of the Dade Correctional Institution when he was locked in a scalding hot shower by two correctional officers for nearly 2 hours. Although inmates claimed to have been forced to clean chunks of his flesh out of the shower, the medical examiner's report claims no burns were found on his body. Rainey's death led to the resignation of the two involved officers and the dismissal of the Wharton 2014. The Florida chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union is calling for a federal inquiry into Rainey's death. I mean, I don't understand. You put the guy in a scalding hot shower and they quit. Oh, that's it?
No, that's inhumane. I mean, they wouldn't even do that to a dog. What comes for these officers that were involved, I think they deserve everything.
I'm just not quite understanding how they quit. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen a number of these cases where officers have failed to discharge properly their duty when they have people in custody. People, if they are suspects in crimes, they have to be arrested, booked, etc., but they have to still be treated as people
when
they're in custody.
I might want to arrest the folks in the jail. The officer who killed Akai Gurley did nothing to help the dying man after fatally shooting him in the chest, according to witness testimony yesterday. New York police officer Peter Leong is charged with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide in the 2014 shooting death of Gurley inside of Brooklyn's Pink House. Prosecutors claim Leong acted recklessly when he rushed into the dark building with his gun drawn. Melissa Lopez, the witness who called 911, told the jury she saw Gurley's girlfriend trying to perform CPR, but that Leong hung back. She said, quote, I didn't see him do anything. I saw him walk around then and come down the stairs to ask me what was the address of the building. He claims, though, that he did indeed try to help him, but also the union claims that he was so distraught that he didn't know what to do. After mounting social media backlash, one of the six white girls suspended for taking a picture spelling out the N-word says she's sorry. Really? Here's a picture of the seniors from Desert Vista High School in suburban Phoenix, Arizona. The girls posed for the picture, taking a senior class photo spelling out a larger message. On Monday, there was a rally calling for the girls to be expelled instead of just suspended for a week. One of the girls in the picture attended the rally saying she's not a racist.
I come here to say that I am incredibly, incredibly sorry. I have love for everyone in my heart. I am not a racist, and I'm asking everyone for forgiveness to me.
School, 66% white, 7% black. Folks, why would you wear a shirt that spells nigger, but you say, I'm not racist, but then you leave out the two G's like we can't figure out what that was?
So, a couple of things. One is, I think the bigger frustration for me with this is that this was a message specifically designed for one of the little girl's black boyfriends, and they said that. So, to me, it's not just that you were trying to make a joke that you thought might be funny, maybe because you listen to hip-hop or whatever, but you were actually targeting a young black man.
I mean, it's crazy. And I'm sorry. 5-day suspension? No, you got to go. You got to go. Also, folks, we come back. We're going to talk about, again, what is happening in terms of first, we're dealing with Hollywood. We already dealt with that issue. But also, Donald Trump, speaking of Hollywood, the biggest reality show on television, he's ticked off that a woman, Megyn Kelly, is going to be asking questions. Donald, really? You punked out of the debate because you're scared to debate a woman? Dude, you are weak. We'll talk about it with our panel also. A kid playing the piano in a mall goes viral. We'll talk to him. Plus, Sweet Honey in the Rock. It's part two of our interview next on News 1 Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Now, if Mr. Trump is scared to face Megyn Kelly, then I would ask that he at least show the respect that is owed to the men and women of Iowa. If he's unwilling to stand on the debate stage with the other candidates, then I would like to invite Donald right now to engage in a one-on-one debate with me anytime between now and the Iowa caucuses.
All right, Donald Trump was leading the Republican field as punked out. He is not going to participate in Thursday's debate on Fox News. He says, I don't like Megyn Kelly. She's not going to be fair, so I'm taking my ball and I'm going home because I don't want to debate some woman. And that's so that's what Donald Trump has decided to do. Let's get right to it with our panel. Folks, this is weak. Now, all the political people say, oh, this is brilliant. Trump is getting so much attention. He doesn't need the debate. This shows you he is a petulant child. And then he criticized Fox News because they put out this very provocative statement in response to him. And their PR people are known for doing that. So he's mad with their particular statement. I'm sorry, he's weak.
There's a lot of yang being talked on both sides of this, right? You've got Trump, as you said, he's going into this debate 4 days before the first caucuses. He's never run for office before, and now trying to flip the script on Fox News, the biggest cable network in the country. It reflects, just like the Fox press release said, this idea that, look, you're supposed to be tough against Putin, you're supposed to be tough against Iran, you're supposed to be smack-talking President Obama, yet you are afraid to go up against Megyn Kelly, who asked him perfectly legitimate questions in that first debate.
Let me offer this as a disclaimer. I cannot stand Donald Trump or anything he stands for, but this particular move to me is brilliant, and I will tell you why. I don't think that he's afraid to face Megyn Kelly as the debate moderator. I do think he is playing into something that he says is, you never show people where you're coming from. You always offer an element of surprise. He talks about it in The Art of the Deal. He just talked about it most recently on an interview. And it yet again has all of us spiraling out of control, talking about Donald Trump and what his next move is going to be. I think the fact that he's talking about doing an event for wounded warriors and vets at the same exact time is absolutely going to mess up their ratings. I think that, yeah, of course, the statement back to him saying, well, you didn't have any issue with your 132-plus appearance is on Fox. Yeah, that's brilliant, Fox News, but guess what? You're going to keep booking them because it helps with your ratings.
Now, here's what's interesting, though. Yeah. He's going to do he said he's going to do this fundraiser at the same time. But CBS News did an investigation of Wounded Warriors showing major financial issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? For all the brilliance, guess what? It's not necessarily the best timing in the world when, again, CBS News is saying millions of bucks are being spent by wounded warriors that's not going to actual wounded warriors.
But his base isn't going to investigate that. You're smart.
Well, I got you.
No shame.
Angela, I agree with you that he's smart to take over the news cycle.
Yes,
right? Every day
that's
that
right.
We're talking about Trump, Ted Cruz can't get his message out. The other candidates get his message
thank
out.
God.
So I agree with you on that point. But I do think Roland has a point, too, that he's undermining this idea that he's the toughest guy in the room by saying, oh, he doesn't like the questions he was asked, I'm just going to stay.
But you don't think they're going to say, oh, he even took on Fox News? That's what his base likes. Like, unfortunately, I'm with you, but that they're different. Like, I've tried to figure them out for a long time. It's not working.
Yeah, no, this is a brilliant move. I agree with Angela. His polls, he's still going to be number one. This isn't going to hurt him at all.
Well, first of all, the same dude who said, look, I can shoot somebody in the street and I'm not going to lose any voters, which tells me you got some dumbass people who are voting for you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just cut to the chase. If you say something like that, I'm sorry, I'm just going to call it like it is. And that's the case here. But again, I think what you are seeing is also the result of a Republican Party that was afraid to take on Donald Trump for the longest. I don't know how you had debate after debate and you had candidates who were afraid to hit the front runner, which I've never seen. And so they've allowed this monster to go up and now they're fretting. So now you have Concerned Women for America coming after him, evangelicals coming after him. Because you know what?
And also endorsing him at the same time.
A little late.
But the most withering criticism of Trump, and we've talked about this, has been from the right. The big hitters on the right, George Will, Charles Krauthammer, Jonah Goldberg, et cetera. They've all disclaimed, disowned Trump for months.
But he calls the elites.
But those aren't the people voting for him in Iowa, and he knows that.
And some of the Republicans have taken him on, and they got smacked back. Like, they lost. So that's, like, where I started saying that he was, like, the new Teflon Don on air, because nothing sticks to this dude.
Well, because I think part of the deal, though, is when you see, let's go back to me with kids. They were slap fighting. He was swinging. So when they hit back at him, it was sort of like, okay, we're just going to do a little slap
but
fight.
But he was saying, like, crazy stuff on a debate stage, which was unprecedented.
No, I understand that. But here's my whole point. They were slap fighting.
Okay.
He was throwing haymakers. When you know you're going to fight against somebody throwing haymakers, you got to throw some haymakers back. And so when he punched, they punched back, they're like, oh, okay, I don't want to necessarily go there. Well, Donald, that's just not true. No, you got to say, Donald, You lied here, here, here. But when you went through, I saw three debates where no punches thrown to him at all. And so he walked out going, I'm good.
Because
I'm unscathed.
After he leaves the debate stage, he's the first one they want to interview. After he leaves that interview, he's the one who's on air, whether it's via phone or whatever else the next day. They will not lose that. They will not win that cycle. He doesn't even have to, he hasn't even had to put up ads yet until January.
Well, he hasn't had to put up any issues either.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm still trying to.
I mean, hold up. You're a Republican. Is that any issue you've actually heard him detail?
No. And there's so many people that are so for him, and yet no issues have been put forward.
I told you, it's some dumb people in America.
Well, and he has the built-in advantage, unique in politics, that he's been on TV front and center for 30 or 40 years, but has no voting record that his opponents can attack.
Yeah, but here's my whole point. I've never seen a deal where, again, you don't put up any issues. You put up nothing. Nothing. Folks like, that's my man. No, this is America. This is America after attacking President Obama for 8 years, calling him weak, saying America has faltered. And what this guy's doing, he's playing John Wayne.
He looks decisive.
And they are loving John Wayne. Now, he ain't saying nothing.
No, not at all, but he looks decisive regardless of what the issue is. The fact that he looks decisive and sounds tough and has made a lot of money is enough for them. And I think that speaks volumes.
And what get me are the broke folk. Like, he really care about you.
Your dream, not the reality.
All right, folks. Coming up, we're going to hear from a young man who has gone viral playing a piano in a mall. And now, folks, got a GoFundMe page trying to help him further his lessons. Also, part two of my interview with Sweet Honey and The Rock, plus his Wild Night Wednesday, where we have a little fun with our comedians as well. All of that next on News 1 Now on TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.
Folks, more than 500,000 people have clicked onto Sarah Hadley's Facebook page to see 18-year-old Montel West's self-taught rendition of Rivers Flows in You, a song by South Korean artist. He, of course, was doing this in a mall in Lansing, Michigan last Friday. And when she captured this, she was just stunned by it. And West, he can't read music, doesn't have a piano at home. He was learning on the keyboard and has blown so many people away that now there's a GoFundMe campaign to get him some lessons. He wants to major in music. And Montel joins us via Skype right now from Lansing. Montel, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
So help us out here. So you've never had any formal training?
Nah, I haven't had any lessons at all.
So how did you learn how to play?
Well, when I was younger, me and my friend, Coach Chang, we just happened to both have the same interest and wanted to play piano. And I was learning saxophone at the time. I was learning tenor sax. So I didn't really have time to really get lessons, and I didn't really have the money for it. So he introduced me to this program on YouTube called Synthesia, which is for people who like me and him who have really good visual memory, and where you like watch and listen to it and basically have to try to guess sounds. So my friend, then he ended up getting lessons, and I told my dad, I was like, Dad, I want to learn how to play piano. And he was like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah. He's like, okay. He's like, we can't get you a piano, but he said, I'm going to get you a keyboard. So he got me a keyboard, and then from then, I just started practicing a little bit, just like practicing little exercises, and eventually, I just used Synthesia to try to learn more and more songs that I liked, and River Flows was one of the first songs I actually learned.
You learned by watching a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. First of all, what does it feel like, though, to all of a sudden be seen as this prodigy, this sensation, and folks all across the country are talking about you?
It feels like, I don't know, it makes me feel good about myself to see that my talents are recognized and see that so many people are, like, interested in me. It just makes me feel, like, really good about myself. I don't know, because, I know that I've been, like, been playing piano and everything, but I would never thought that something like this would happen. I mean, I know I was going to do something with music, but I never would, like, expect it. Like, if we just, like, blow up like that, and it's just, like, it was really surprising. It just makes me feel happy because a lot of people recognize me for, like, the talent and everything. And it's, like, I don't know, it just makes me feel really great.
Angela?
So, Montel, first of all, we commend you on your brilliance, and it's not even Black History Month, so thank you for what you're doing. I think it's inspiring right now, particularly because of all of the bad news we're hearing in this country. I'm just dying to know what your plans are. I know folks are trying to push you to take piano lessons, and you're like, hashtag been there, done that. But what do you see yourself doing next in this music space?
At the moment, I don't really know really what I want to do yet, but I know that I want to go to LCC and study music management. I don't really know because all these things have been, like, offers have been coming at me, and I don't really know what's, like, going to happen after that. But right now, I just know I want to go to LCC and study music management because it gives me, like, a variety of different things that I can say, like, music producing and, like, running a music business and stuff like that. And I don't know, just hopefully I can get somewhere in, like, with my music, playing with piano and other instruments that I've been playing.
Roland, get him a gig on Empire. He's ready.
David?
No, really nice young guy. And look, all I could ever do was teach myself how to tie a bow tie on YouTube, not play piano. So, yeah.
And you don't, not even wearing a bow tie.
Yeah, well.
All right, Kimberly, you got a question for Montel?
Yeah, Montel, I'm definitely going to go and fund you. You are absolutely amazing. I had to ask, is that even a real piano you were playing on in the mall? It looked like a toy.
I know. It was like a real piano. I mean, I consider it. It sounded like someone. It's like, it was like, it's been there for a while now, and they fixed it up a little bit, but
okay.
It's like, a, you know, a really big, expensive piano, but it was like enough where I can just like practice. It's because it's like better than my keyboard, because my keyboard.
Well, you are truly talented.
Thank you.
Well, Montel, we certainly appreciate it, man. Again, good luck in the future. And I'm quite sure, first of all, pull up the GoFundMe page, folks. It's Montel West Piano Fund. Already, the goal is to raise $4,800. $4,736 has been raised by 158 people. I want all of you folks watching News One Now to truly contribute. And I wouldn't be surprised if you hear from some HBCU music program about coming to their school as well. So we appreciate it. And good luck, and let us know how it goes.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
All right, thanks a bunch. Folks, we'll stick with our music theme. Yesterday, we had part one of our interview with Grammy-nominated group Sweet Honey and the Rock. The ladies are known, of course, for the unique mix of blues, African, jazz, gospel, and R&B. Part two, I asked them, how important is it for all of them to continue real singing?
Very important. I miss it. I think we all miss it. We were talking about how you used to be able to hear three notes and you know who that was, and hear three notes, you know who that was, and nobody sound alike. You know, I think it's very important because I think when you're able to sing in your own voice, it's coming out of something authentic that you're feeling as well, you know, instead of just the sound. You know, sometimes, and this is no offense against any singer, but sometimes
she's like, no shade,
because I love some of them, but you know, you hear a sound and it's a sound. You got 10 singers that sing in that same
like
sound.
That.
I miss the distinction of a voice.
Yeah.
You know, Lou Rawls don't sound like James Brown.
Oh God,
don't
no.
sound like
groovy
Aretha
people.
Franklin.
No, you're right.
Like Gladys Knight. You know,
OJ's, Teddy P.
No, I know.
Erykah Badu doesn't sound like India Arie.
But a whole lot of people sound like her.
Rico doesn't sound like. You know.
Not every single person, but in my ear, yes, there's a group of a sound.
Oh, you mean when you listen to the radio?
Oh, yeah. I'll be some places. I'm going, I was at some part, and I went, is that the same person singing for the last 30 minutes? Because
right.
It literally it was like one continuous thing. I got to ask you this here, and that is freedom songs.
Mm.
How critical was it to have songs that were able to sustain people doing the Black Freedom Movement?
Wow. I think, I'm just while you're asking that question, I'm thinking of an African tradition where there's music that accompanies what you do in your daily life. It's not like you're going to a performance or something special. And I think bringing that essence, that idea and that feeling with us, music always sustained us in a hostile territory. The more mournful songs, the slave songs, the work songs, all of those things have always been with us. And I think we just carry that through as part of our tradition.
Because a lot of people don't realize that when you look during the Black Freedom Movement, and I've read numerous books dealing with SNCC and others, and in fact, I have a variety of musical compilations of freedom singers. Mm-hmm. Several of your songs are on there as well. We think about hearing I Woke Up This Morning With My Mind Stayed on Freedom and other songs as well. You had students who were literally in jail, and it was the music that got them through.
Exactly. That's like, Louisa, when you were talking about the authenticity of the voice and the human voice going through you, coursing through your body, galvanizing you, all the voices coming together. That's very, very powerful.
It was a connector, the support. You know, mm-hmm. You could sing a song or begin a song and someone else would join in.
That's right.
You know, it could be 300-400 people out there.
As congregational
singers. But I could sing something and the 300th person could join in. I think it was just a connector. Sometimes the people would join in the church and get together and sing and build up the power and the energy before they went out to march. And as you said, in jails and in marches,
And Dr. King and others always understood the role music played
right.
at every part of the movement.
Right. Yeah, everybody Absolutely. Is hip to music.
Right.
Everybody can feel some kind of music.
Do you believe that this current movement is missing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about Black Lives Matter.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. We have done a few, some rallies and been in, I've watched things right. online and some of the songs, one song that does roll a lot through this is We Who Believe in Freedom Cannot Rest, written mm-hmm. by Bernice Johnson Reagan, words of Ella Baker, who believed in young people being able to be a catalyst and to be able to move this thing forward, and because it's your world coming. We can do what we can to help, but it's your world coming, and they use that Ella song, you know, quite a bit. Mm. We do believe that there could be more music.
But I think they're open to it.
Yeah.
I get a sense people would be open to it if someone would lead them into music.
Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in people who can sing and folks who can sing. I think y'all in the category of sing.
Singing.
So let's see.
What you want?
It don't matter. First of all, folks, the CD is Love and Evolution. So we're going to have them do a little something to take us on out to break. So what y'all going to do?
How about Ella's song?
Come on, Feather and Leather.
Go ahead.
Feather and Leather. Come on, Water Woman. Come on. Y'all sing the Ella song? All right.
No, go ahead.
We shall not move. Oh, we shall not. We're just like a tree. Just like a tree.
Y'all be moved to get this CD. Hashtag Love and Evolution, Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Oh, thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. All right, y'all, coming up next, got Wildin' Out Comedians. Seriously, what's up with the Pim Lean? Seriously? Sit the hell up. You're on television. Sit the hell up. Your mama watching. Back on News One Now in a moment.
We're SWV.
Be sure to pick up our new album, Still.
You're watching News One Now
with Roland Martin on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hi, y'all. Birthday shout-out time. Actress Devetta Sherwood, known for her role in The Young and the Restless. She turns 32. Actor, comedian John Witherspoon. Hey. Coordinate. turns 74. All right, this day in history, 1953, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man wins a National Book Award. Henry ain't never read that. In 1984, Michael Jackson's hair catches on fire while filming a Pepsi commercial. You know, some folk haven't read.
That was a great
day. I know. If the Invisible Man has some pictures in it, Henry would have caught it, but it ain't got pictures in it, so he ain't never read it. It's not a comic book. It's a real book, Henry. All right. It's Wild Out Wednesday. We got our comedians in the house. We got Eddie Bryant. Eddie, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
All right, dude. Got the little cute little...
Hey, you know what I'm saying?
Little accoutrement. Go ahead. Yeah.
Working on it.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Where you stole it from?
Well, listen, Roland. When you shovel out the snow, you can't be putting on suits and stuff. And you ain't shovel your snow. I got to shovel my own snow.
That's an excellent point you made, because I didn't. All right, we got Paris here. Paris, how you doing?
Hey, Roland. I'm good. How are you?
All good. And we got James Lawson.
All right.
Got his preacher suit on.
Yes,
really.
Sir. Praise the Lord.
Yes, absolutely. And you got that Mr. Rep. Damn, that sweater's hot. I'm itching right now. All right, then. But a nice little pocket. Let me see the pocket square. Let's see what you got down there.
A little something, man. I'm trying to get like you, Roland.
Is it a real pocket square?
Hey, come on, man. Come on.
That's why it was.
Got bottled up.
Paris, pass that over here.
Come on, man.
Paris, to pass that over here.
It ain't a dinner nap.
Why didn't you break it out?
Brother, you need to learn how. First of all, get rid of the damn tag. I keep telling y'all.
Yeah, this price tag.
Paris, stick that in.
Just like that.
Thank you, man.
Oh, he Eddie done messed it up.
There you go right there, man. It's all right.
It ain't a dove.
Eddie know how to pass
a dove.
You know how to pass. Too low. Too low. You got to break. You got to show some color.
Woo.
Yeah. Come on. You got to show some.
That's my wife's favorite color. Hey, babe.
That's your wife's favorite color.
I heard Donald Trump outside looking at
you. You having a flashback or something? I mean,
hey, man.
You got a little happy down there.
I got to represent, man.
Okay, all right. What's your wife's name? Give a shout out.
Oh, Anita Lawson. Hey, baby, how you doing? Love you.
I said a shout out. I ain't said, okay, something else. Oh, Jesus.
You trying to get that Valentine's Day.
I mean, Lord.
Baby, I shouted you out on TV.
Yeah, right. I gave your whole name, your government name. All right, then, y'all. I got to ask y'all about this. A Brooklyn, New York resident advertised a man-made igloo on Airbnb, a popular website dedicated to homeowners who want to rent out their residences short-term for travelers. Now, Patrick Horton and friends built the igloo in Brooklyn over the weekend during the blizzard.
Right.
They advertised it as Snowpalock. What the hell is that? Snow pop, whatever the hell. Anyway, most desirable getaway for $200 a night. Airbnb quickly removed the igloo from their site, stating the igloo was very well constructed but didn't meet our occupancy rules. Y'all, I mean, it's New York now. Let's just be.
That's better than a lot of hotels in New York right there. Ain't no bed bugs in that igloo.
Yeah, I've stayed in worse.
I'm
just saying. I mean, I thought it was a pretty ingenious idea.
Pretty good.
Paris?
What's inside of it? Nothing?
Damn it, it's an igloo. What? It's ice.
No,
what?
I don't think it's a good idea. Not for $200, no.
Have you seen the prices in New York?
Yeah, I did, but I'm not convinced.
Damn, Gary better bring you a sleeping blanket or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, as long as you got your long johns, I think you stay in that joint for a couple of hours.
Long John?
Long John. That's all you need in that joint right there. Long John.
Long John?
Long John.
But you got a onesie?
You don't got no long?
You got one of those onesies?
Roland, you see all this snow out here, man. You need long johns in this type of wood. This ain't no...
No, I go from garage to garage.
He ain't out here with the people.
I'm with the people. I wave when I'm driving.
That's terrible, bro.
I speak to them. I crack the window. Hey!
We getting on this train when we leave here, Roland. You riding with me. We're going to Green Line. We're going to leave from here. We're going to go to Navy Yard.
It ain't going to happen. I'm just letting you know.
That ain't going to happen. Man, they would love to see you.
That ain't going to happen. My daddy told me, well, raise it up. Look, you ain't taking public transportation.
That's
my daddy said. My dad said, I took it all my life. He said, nuh-uh. He said, I'm going to drive you. That's my dad said. I rode the bus twice.
What?
That was it.
Oh, you were sheltered. You can't be from D.C.
My dad was like, no. Mm-hmm. And wasn't like, look, we ain't have money. But he was like, no, we're going
to
ride in the car.
In D.C., you go to preschool on the bus. It's 3-year-olds. Like,
man,
they know how to
catch
the bus.
I was on the train from D.C. yesterday to New York, and I had to take the subway to National.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. It was an experience.
Yeah. You ain't had no fun.
I ain't have to pay, though. So the brother who hooked me up, he liked my Stacey Dash takedown.
So
he's like, brother, you our voice. So let me go ahead and give you this voucher. Brother, go on right in. I ain't going to give you his name because then he's going to lose his job. But he hooked me up, so I appreciate that.
Stacey Dash and Donald Trump looking for you. His hairpiece is out front right now, ready to wreck. What you going to do?
Anytime. Because here's the deal. I ain't Megyn Kelly. I'll swing on you. I'll swing on you. All right.
That's what we
want to
see.
Let me go to a break before James will be texting his wife, and he's going to have her come on the show in any moment.
She already called.
But all right, folks, be back on News 1 Now in just one moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Y'all, welcome back. News 1 Now. We got Eddie Bryan, we got Paris, and we got Preacher James Lawson. Glad to have y'all. No, I'm saying, think about it. Look over there. I mean, got it all going on over there. All right, then. So I got to ask y'all, so Trump, is he scared of Megyn Kelly?
I think he's scared of Megyn Kelly.
Definitely. I agree. You think she's scared?
Damn, you know, this is a...
I think his headpiece can take her.
This is a talk show.
I mean, you know,
supposed to talk.
Yeah, I know.
You ain't a shout-out for your wife and you go quiet?
What you say, dear? Okay. So I think his headpiece can take her, but he can't. You know what I'm saying? I just think he can't. I mean, Trump supporters scare me.
Why is that?
Because they just going with the flow. He don't make no sense. He just, like, showing up. Hey, I'm the man. And they like, yep, we going to vote. And then Sarah Palin come in there. She twerking. It's just a whole lot of.
First of all, I didn't know what the hell Sarah Palin was saying in that her endorsement. She created an alternative language.
Yeah.
That's
she was speaking your man's and them, but from the white side. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It was like the white side on the man's. Yeah, that's how white people do that.
We
you
never
know,
heard
my
that
man's like woo woo woo, but on the white side, like, yeah, Obama the reason, my son smacking women, and blah blah blah. My girl
is that
pregnant.
Crazy? Her son beat up his girlfriend, and she blamed Obama.
Obama fought for everything. Global warming, everything.
I feel for that brother. I can't wait for his last day. It is going to be a party on the White House lawn. We all going to go over there. We're going to get and hang out. We're going to cook out and see him off with.
All right, go and jump that fence.
I ain't going to jump the fence.
Go and jump that fence and see what happens. Go and jump that fence and see what happens.
I'm going to Australia, Ron.
What the hell does that have to do with your story of a White House lawn?
I just wanted to tell you on the news.
Okay, you got a passport?
Yes.
Okay,
got a couple of stamps, too.
Oh, shocking. All right,
you
performing somewhere next beside at home?
Say it again.
You performing somewhere next beside at home?
Oh, no. Right now, I'm focusing on this play I'm doing. We're doing a play with... called Holding On. What camera we in? Called Holding On.
Dude, you taking them all the time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm at Bus Boys and Poets on Valentine's Day.
Jesus, he took all the time. I'll see y'all tomorrow. Holla! Yeah.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.